Bankless Nation, welcome to the weekly roll-up where we cover the weekly news, drama, and developments in the crypto space. This is the second week of February, and today on the show, I have the pleasure of being joined by Tarun Chitra, the Grand Poombah and Gigabrain at Gauntlet. Welcome, Tarun. Happy Valentine's Day, my man.
Happy Valentine's Day. No one else I'd rather spend it with.
I'm honored. We usually hear you, the Grand Poombah over at Gauntlet, from the chopping block. That's what Haseeb calls you. I had Haseeb on to help me go through the news 2 weeks ago, so I guess I'm just kind of like running through chopping block guests. After you, who should I have on? I'm between the two remaining people.
I mean, I think Tom is the silent killer. You know, in all the statistics, he speaks the least but has the most sharp commentary. So I think he's worth getting on.
I think you're the culturalist of them all, even though you are an absolute math genius, math whiz. You're always up with the times, up with the gossip. So I think maybe this is like a gossip heavy episode.
All right, I'm excited.
We'll get to the gossip at the end. First, we're going to talk about Trump versus the Fed. Federal Reserve signals no more interest rates, which made Donald Trump a sad boy. News that no one had on their bingo card. OpenSea announces an airdrop. Arbitrum is just one step away from being a fully decentralized stage 2 Ethereum rollup. And also, Vitalik is a communist. Or Vitalik made a joke about communism. No one on crypto Twitter can really tell which is which. So we're going to get to all this and more. But first, we're going to talk to our friends and sponsors over at Morpho. If you are a user or builder interested in lending, this message is for you. Morpho is the first and only DeFi protocol integrated into Coinbase.com. Pretty cool. Coinbase in the front, Morpho in the back. Morpho provides go-to lending infrastructure for on-chain loans because it is the unique value proposition for Morpho just is offering builders the flexibility and users to customize products precisely to their needs. Gauntlet actually is one of the service providers to the Morpho stack. Actually, since I have you, Tarun, can you kind of explain how Gauntlet fits into Morpho?
Yeah, for sure. So Morpho, I would say, is a kind of different version of how the DeFi stack can look, where there's a DAO that controls some set of the behavior of the protocol, but then there are curators who are people who run vaults that manage what assets are being lent, what percentage of assets are allowed to be lent, and the interest rates and utilization, LTVs, and stuff like that. And the idea is that you have a market where you have competing curators who have different properties of their vaults, and the market can choose. So it's sort of different than, you know, an Aave or Compound, where the DAO chooses the parameters, right? The DAO chooses the interest rates. The DAO chooses the... And so here, instead, it's like competing participants and the market kind of joins. Now, I think in general, we've seen a lot of movement overall throughout DeFi towards this vault model, but Morpho was sort of the first to really get traction with it.
Yeah, and this kind of gives Gauntlet, which is like kind of setting the risk parameters a little bit. It puts it in the driver's seat around the vaults. And it gives kind of like, people like Gauntlet, entities like Gauntlet, a little bit more control of what they want their vaults to look like. There's a link in the show notes if you want to get started with Morpho. That link is bankless.cc/Morpho. All right, let's get into macro. Tarun, I've never actually heard you comment on macro, so I'm interested to hear your takes on the macro markets. The thing that happened this week was that hopes for more Fed rate cuts were dashed, as Powell noted that the hot CPI means we're not quite there yet. So signaled that we are not going to get any more rate cuts in 2025 due to higher than expected inflation. Inflation rose 0.5% month over month, and we're at 3% year over year. The forecast was 2.9%. This similar numbers came in from the CPI. On top of that, Powell testified in front of Congress this week, emphasizing that the Fed is in no rush to cut interest rates because the economy is strong and inflation remains elevated. Donald Trump did not like this. On Truth Social, he tweeted out, "Interest rates should be lowered, something which should go hand in hand with upcoming tariffs. Let's rock and roll America." This happened last Trump administration, 8 years ago, where Trump went head to head with Powell, really trying to get him to lower interest rates, make a more easy monetary policy environment. I don't really remember actually how that turned out. But the markets did not like this. S&P 500 declined 0.25%. The Treasury yields jumped, which is something we know that Donald Trump does not want. He wants Treasury yields to go down. And then also Bitcoin and crypto markets also dipped below. Bitcoin fell below $95,000 when the markets opened. Tarun, Any macro commentary?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing to realize, I guess, about Trump's posturing is that, like, a lot of his policies are generally pro-inflation, right? Like tariffs, it's more expensive to buy stuff from outside the U.S., even if it's cheaper to produce. And so I think his economic policy relies on low interest rates. And I think in general, you know, the world doesn't seem to look like that right now. I do wonder, though, if like a lot of that overheating will calm down. You know, I think like post-election, there was just like so much ebullience in every market that every price went up for, every commodity even. Mm-hmm. And so my belief is that this quarter, it might be very biased by the fact that like all financial markets went up just for like unboundedly for like 2 months. And like now we're kind of getting over the hangover. And I think we'll see prices relax a bit. I think we'll also see responses to tariffs that kind of maybe make some prices cheaper, some prices worse. But in general, I don't know. I feel like it is funny that crypto's value prop feels a little bit like 2021, where it's a prediction market on the weekends for what the NASDAQ is going to do on Monday.
I think that probably is where we end up when we are just going flat. Like you said, the crypto markets are the only thing that's open on the weekend. Bitcoin, pretty flat on the week, down 1.8%, which is pretty mellow. Ether down 2.7% on the week, a little bit worse, continuing its slide against Bitcoin. Ether's at $2,600, which is not a super high price. Overall, I wouldn't say this is really any different than price action that we've seen. As we zoom out, Faroon, like, what are your takes about just like the market as a whole? Obviously, we know Solana over the cycle has done very, very well. Bitcoin, because of the Donald Trump presidency, has done very, very well. It's no surprise to anyone, no new news to anyone, that Ether has lagged all these things. Just what are your broad takes about the theme of the cycle?
I mean, I do think the new launches, like the new chain launches, have not been good. I really feel like meme coins becoming popular really killed the kind of launches of new L1s and new L2s in terms of token value this year, like even more so than ETH, right? Like I think ETH at least has had ETF inflows. People are trying to launch a staking ETF, you know, like there's some positive news. I feel like the like 50 to 100 alts, that's where the bloodbath is. And maybe that's not worth talking about because their market cap percentage is shrinking. I think Bitcoin dominance hit like 70% this week at some point. And so, but I think the fact that like the new coin launches have been quite poor relative to expectation has been sort of one of the more surprising things. I think Solana seems to have reasonably kept some, you know, obviously it's down like 30% from maybe a little more, 35% from the peak. But yeah, I kind of feel like the real bloodbath is a little bit lower if you go lower down the list.
Yeah, I remember I was listening to your guys' conversation about dispersion, and I think you were on one side and Hasib was on the other, where Hasib was like, no, there's always been too many coins in crypto to choose from. But nonetheless, it seems to be like you can always get more dispersed. And that long tail below 50 is seemingly really getting stretched as far possible as we've ever seen before in crypto.
I just don't think there's that much new capital going into it versus like... you know, I think like people not making money, like inevitably not making money off meme coins means there's not enough capital to go and rotate into those. So it does sort of feel like a bit of a malaise, but maybe the washing out is good, right? Like it generally means like projects that are not worth it won't make it, or projects that kind of overpromised won't survive. So we'll see. I guess like to me, the biggest thing is like, ETH staking ETFs, I think if that gets approved, that's like a big deal. And then Solana, obviously, I think there's just a ton of positive headwinds in both the ETF side, but also just like overall usage, stablecoin issuance, etc. All of the institutions starting stuff, like Franklin Templeton announced they're doing their money market fund on Solana this week. So like, I kind of think like, Solana has a bunch of tailwinds pushing it in the right direction. ETH, I think everyone is only focused on the headwinds, but I think there are some tailwinds, things like staking ETF. And so, yeah, you know, it's a meme at this point to say ETH is oversold, but I think it is.
I think that the ETH staking ETF, this is coming in from 21 Shares, which is the organization that I think ARK partners with. Kathy was ARK, a European-based company, but also has entities in America. 21 Shares proposed adding staking to its Ethereum ETF. So this is, I think this is the first and only known proposal towards staking that has been added to an ETF. So, of course, this is not approved, but this is, you know, putting this thing in motion that we are going to get staking into its, into an ETH ETF that is already live. This is Ryan Rasmussen from Bitwise, who was asked his take about the impact of staking on like investor appetite for the Ethereum ETF. He says, unless they're crypto enthusiasts, most financial advisors don't know what staking is, and it's not the factor that's going to sway them one way or another when it comes to investing in crypto. And so my interpretation of this is that if you're just kind of a TradFi non-crypto native investor, the inclusion of staking is just like kind of foreign to you. But also that does conflict with, I think, what we know of about why the both Bitcoin and Ether ETFs had such strong inflows in the first few days of their being live. Is it was actually crypto natives putting crypto assets in their retirement accounts. And so those people are informed about what the impact of staking might do. What's your take on this?
I think my main take is like, most ETFs have different ways of making money. Some are creation redemption fees. Some are just AUM fees. Some are they lend out the assets. I think the idea that you have a natural form of yield means that to the average investor, they're going to have like at worst a feeless ETF, like that doesn't have any fees at all. And I think that is a, you know, there's a world in which you can say, okay, yeah, like staking is too complicated to understand. But there's a world in which you can say the most popular index funds in the world are Vanguard funds, which whose entire business model is like, we will charge you less in fees than everyone else. And staking will allow the ETF providers to basically charge less in fees. And I think that that meme has worked in TradFi of like the low fee ETF. And I kind of think the staking ETFs have that. Like it could be mimetic. It could meme into the low fee ETF, like the way Vanguard has, right? So that's sort of my, maybe it's a midwit take because it's like, oh, who cares about fees if you're buying crypto ETFs? But in normal trad index investing, people do seem to care about a lot. So
There's more news on the ETF front. The Trump group about TruthFi, the TruthFi like financial group, which is now a financial group now, has filed for a bunch of ETFs. So there is the TruthFi Bitcoin Plus ETF that has been filed. There's the TruthFi Made in America ETF, the TruthFi US Energy Independence ETF, and then also, like I just said, the Bitcoin ETF. This is Eric Balchunas's statement inside of the Bloomberg Terminal. Trump Media applied to trademark brands for six products with America First themes, including exchange traded funds dubbed Made in America, U.S. Energy Independence, Bitcoin Plus. This is totally normal for an issuer to file ETFs. There were over 700 ETFs launched last year alone. It is unorthodox for a company where the U.S. president is the majority owner to do so. What do you think about Donald Trump launching ETFs, one being a Bitcoin ETF? That's going to be very late to the game, but nonetheless is in the game.
Yeah, I mean, this actually gets back to the fee thing, right? Like, there are some ETFs where people pay a premium in fees just for the brand. So like, for instance, like the BlackRock Bitcoin ETF, despite it having higher fees than some of the other ETFs, did a lot better, right? Like it had way more inflows, mainly because people are just like, I don't really know these other issuers. And there's some brand equity around that. And so I kind of, my real question is, does Trump have enough of a brand as an ETF to like charge higher fees? If not, then I don't understand what the point is. Like even economically, I'm ignoring all the ethical whatever issues, but like if we just look at it as a financial product, do we think the brand is strong enough for that? That's, I don't know. Like I, you know, I'm sure there's a ton of DJT shareholders who would go buy Trump ETFs. Are there enough of them? I don't know.
I think one signal for that is there is a millions and millions of dollars pouring into World Liberty Financial from who knows who. So I do think there is like a mountain of capital out there in the world who will strictly just purchase Donald Trump's financial products.
Justin Sun. He's ready to buy TrueFi.
Something that's happening in the world of TradFi is that it's earnings season. And so Coinbase earnings are actually getting reported today. So we don't have that information in this week. But Robinhood reported their earnings last night. And Robinhood smashed earnings, according, apparently. This is from the analysis from a couple people. Reporting 115% year-over-year growth in Q4 to $1 billion of revenue over the year. Driven largely by crypto. So their crypto business, internal to Robinhood, soared 700% to generate $358 million of revenue for Robinhood. In the earnings call, Vlad put out some very bullish crypto innovations, progress, like frontiers that they're trying to go for. He said, this is being paraphrased by Bridget from Founders Fund, we are going to tokenize private company shares. We are going to help launch a stablecoin to pass yield back to consumers because this is the future. We're going to tokenize the entire stock market. We're going to accelerate token listings and explore staking. And oh yeah, also prediction markets are the future. In Q3 of 2024, Coinbase did about $34 billion of retail crypto volume. Robinhood did $14 billion. So Coinbase definitely in the lead by over 2x, like 2.5x. But in Q4, just the same one quarter later, Robinhood did $71 billion, which is a 5x increase from their Q3 amount. It's going to be interesting to see what Coinbase retail numbers are. I don't think they did a 5x, so I think Robinhood is really catching up to Coinbase in terms of retail market share. Coinbase is up on the news that Robinhood reported very strong retail volumes, but it's going to be interesting to see. Do you care about this world, the Robinhood versus Coinbase battles? What's your take?
So, $358 million revenues, and really great for Robinhood in terms of, like, they were, like, you know, 2022, 2023, I feel like everyone was shitting on them, being like, why did you do this crypto thing? You spent all this money. There's no volume, .. And so, like, from that standpoint, the recovery, you got to give them a lot of credit for sticking with it. Because, like, remember when they were forced to remove all these assets because they may have been securities, right? Like, and their
they
stock,
removed Solana, they removed Ripple.
And their stock got a little bit pummeled for that because it was like, oh, like, you spent all this money on acquiring crypto users and, like, now you can't trade anything. And I feel like, you know, if I were Vlad, I would be laughing to the bank at those people, first off. The second thing was the cope from one of the funniest crypto haters on Twitter, which is Patrick, is his last name McKenzie? The guy who's at Stripe, Patio 11.
Oh, yeah. Patrick McHenry.
McHenry is the congressperson.
Oh, that's right.
Patio 11. I know his username.
We've had him on Bankless as a guest. Patrick McKenzie.
And he's just like coping about the fact that Robinhood made money from it. He's like, it's them promoting gambling. I'm like, they're an exchange. They're supposed to make money from volume. Like, are you telling? You were complaining that they like support. You're complaining that they're like enabling gambling, and at the same time you're complaining about your own employer like liking stable coins. Like, I don't know. I feel like
this is a tweet that you're talking of. What's your biting concern of Robinhood then, Patrick? Yes, asked himself. As I've advanced many times over the years, they are licensed as a financial institution and they cosplay as one, but what they actually are is a casino which uses various financial assets as a source of random numbers.
It's just like I find his stuff like a little embarrassing for Stripe, honestly. If I were Stripe, I'd be like, I'm buying companies doing crypto stuff for $1 billion and I'm like working and like, I don't know. But you know, I do feel like he's sort of one of the worst ambassadors for Stripe possible. if they're trying to be like more crypto friendly,
right.
Other things, I guess I would say, I think Robinhood prediction market stuff is going to be interesting if they're going to actually lean into that on the sports betting side. So like, you know, I think we've actually seen a lot of the prediction market volume increase in the sports betting side. And I'm just sort of curious if Robinhood will like get into that. And if they do, if they'll do it on chain. Because I do think between Polymarket and Robinhood, I think this is the best chance we've ever seen for sports betting to move from FanDuel to on-chain stuff. So
interesting. You're seeing Robinhood is the conduit for sports betting to be just a, you know, centralized Web2 server to actually be growing some sort of on-chain footprint.
Yeah. Where they're using. So another thing they announced on the earnings call was that they're going to have yield bearing stable coins. I believe Paxos, USDG will be. So you can hold, you can earn interest from either on-chain or treasuries. It sort of, that part was vague, but like, as you can see from this, the passing yield back, the yield might come from DeFi, the yield might not. That wasn't clear. But my point is, like, I think if I'm a sports bettor and I can pay in yield earning stable coins, why would I not do that versus like paying in cash? Like, it again gets back to my earlier point about ETH staking. Like, forget about people understanding staking yield. It suddenly looks like something that was a fee to them is now an earning, right? Like that's all that matters. And I think that's the same for the, if I can gamble on sports with a yield bearing stable coin, it makes more sense than not, right? Because like it should compensate for a lot of some of the spreads in some of the tighter games.
It's interesting that Robinhood actually, apparently, according to my ChatGPT query, Robinhood has 25 million funded customers, so customers with money in their accounts, whereas Coinbase has over 105 million. So Coinbase actually has extremely massive distribution. Coinbase is valued maybe like $12 billion higher than Robinhood. I think it's 72 to 60. But Robinhood, I've kind of figured that their ability to penetrate into the crypto markets and maybe also via prediction markets and sports betting comes from their distribution. Like, they're such a retail dominated app with a long tail of retail capital. What do you make about just like Robinhood's positioning as to like why it can, like how it can leverage access to some of these financial services by using its distribution?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Coinbase inevitably has like more institutional distribution, right? They have like custody, they have on-chain wallets, just stuff like that. Robinhood is like pure retail, right? There's like not, there's no like real institution there. So I think the interesting thing is like the volume per user is actually higher in retail than it is retail plus institutional, if depending on the Coinbase number, right? Like that's the thing I would be looking at is like, are the institutional traders actually making big block trades in Q4? Or is it only retail trading? And is Robinhood getting a higher percentage of the retail trades? Because like Coinbase in theory could actually have a way higher volume number. And now, of course, you could go compute it. I haven't done that, but I will find out today. But I think like in theory, the institutional number could be very high because like post-election, I feel like that was like all the Bitcoin buying had to come from not just retail, right? Like that seemed like a real move from everyone at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think Robinhood doesn't really have that. So it's actually kind of impressive they can get to these numbers without any of that, without any like sort of larger size traders. So I'm more interested in how they go on chain. Because like this kind of reminds me of like right after 2017 or 2018, when like that was when Robinhood started listing more crypto assets. And like everyone was competing on who would be the next big centralized exchange. And I kind of feel like now everyone's competing on who will be the best next big like on-chain Web2 plus L2 type thing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of their conference call made me think Robinhood really has like a on-chain strategy that's much more fleshed out than they're saying.
Interesting. Yeah, this segment and just hearing this data makes me really want to get Vlad back on the podcast. We've had him on before and he's very, very media trained, so I can't really get that much out of him. But nonetheless, I think I'm going to reach out to him and try again. All right, Bankless Nation, moving on. We're going to talk about a few more subjects coming up next. Trump nominated Brian Quintenz, who is currently the policy advisor for A16Z Crypto. He's been nominated for the role of the chair of the CFTC, which is where he was before he joined A16Z Crypto. We're going to talk about airdrops, the Mega ETH NFT Mint Hyperliquid, and also OpenSea announces the C token. But that's because it is actually the year 2021. And then Arbitrum launched their permissionless fault-proof systems. We're going to get to all of this and more, but first we're going to talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, like Uniswap. It's a browser wallet. It's a mobile wallet. It's now also a chain, but really it's the best place to do DeFi. Let's go hear from Uniswap right now. Introducing UniChain. Built for DeFi and powered by Uniswap, UniChain is the fast, decentralized layer 2 designed to tackle blockchain speed and cost challenges. With this mainnet now live, you can enjoy transactions that are up to 95% cheaper than the ETH layer 1, all while benefiting from an impressive 1 second block time that will be getting even faster very soon. UniChain is the first layer 2 to launch as a stage 1 rollup on day 1. That means it comes with a fully functional permissionless proof system from the start, increasing transparency and further decentralizing the chain. More than 80 apps are joining the UniChain community, including Coinbase, Circle, Lido, Morpho, and Uniswap. You'll be able to bridge, swap, borrow, and lend, and launch new assets and more from day one. Built by Uniswap Labs, the team behind the protocol that's processed over 2.75 trillion in all-time volume with zero hacks, UniChain truly enhances DeFi experiences with faster, cheaper, and seamless transactions, even across chains. And soon, the UniChain Validation Network will allow anyone to run a node and earn by securing the network. Visit uniswap.org and swap on UniChain today. Ondo Finance is leading the way in the tokenization of real-world assets, with a mission to accelerate the transition to an open economy by building the platforms, assets, and infrastructure that bring financial markets on-chain. With Ondo, institutions get seamless access to tokenized finance, while on-chain users gain access to institutional-grade real-world assets like never before. By bridging traditional finance and the blockchain economy, Ondo is unlocking liquidity, efficiency, and global access, reshaping markets for the digital age. As the leader in institutional adoption, Ondo Finance is the gateway to the trillion-dollar tokenization revolution. Institutional-grade finance, on-chain, for everyone. With over $1.5 billion in TVL, the mETH protocol is home to mETH, the fourth largest ETH liquid staking token, offering one of the highest APRs among the top 10 LSTs. And now, CMETH takes things even further. This restaked version captures multiple yields across Kerak, Eigenlayer, Symbiotic, and many more, making CMETH the most efficient and most composable LRT solution on the market. Metamorphosis Season 1 dropped $7.7 million in Cook rewards to mETH holders. Season 2 is currently ongoing, allowing users to earn staking, restaking, and AVS yields, plus rewards in Cook, mETH Protocol's governance token, and more. Don't miss out on the opportunity to stake, restake, and shape the future of mETH Protocol with Cook. Participate today at meth.mantle.xyz. Some pretty bullish news out of the Trump cabinet selection. He has selected Brian Quintenz, who is, like I said, currently the head policy for crypto out of A16Z. He is yet to be confirmed. He's just a nomination, but I think he's probably going to be confirmed. He doesn't really rub anyone the wrong way on either side of the aisle. But I'd say it's pretty damn bullish because Quintenz is just categorically a DeFi, Ethereum, crypto bull. This is him casting out on Farcaster, Brian Quintenz, the nominee for the chair of the CFTC on Farcaster, is saying, "It is my great honor to be nominated by President Trump as the next chairman of the CFTC, where I served as commissioner in the last administration. The CFTC plays a critical role for maintaining robust hedging and price discovery markets that are the envy of the globe. The agency is well poised to ensure the U.S. leads the world in blockchain technology and innovation. I look forward to working with President Trump's incredible financial regulatory team." I think it is also pretty cool that you can go and check out what Brian Quintenz is doing on chain, because he owns BrianQ.eth. He was last seen on chain minting an NFT about 5 months ago, minted a custom punk NFT. So the incoming, likely incoming CFTC chair is posting on Farcaster. He's minting NFTs on chain. I think that's pretty cool. Tarun, what's your take?
I think he was appointed by Obama last time. So
that's right.
I think the likelihood of him not getting confirmed is
zero.
Not zero, but like barely above zero. Yeah. You know, it's like it seems, I feel like, yeah, he seems like a shoo-in. Also kind of, yeah, I feel like, hey, you know, people always complain that government officials have never done on-chain transactions because they're banned from doing so. So they don't understand that it's much better than a wire transfer. And he clearly has. So can't use that complaint. You know, like, I feel like there's not really any, I feel like it's a positive news all around. And I think he's actually done more, I think, than some of the other appointees in terms of like actually using crypto, actually understanding different protocols and stuff like that. So really good to have someone that knowledgeable, honestly. Mm-hmm. That's that, that, yeah, I, there's like nothing negative possible to say about this news. Yeah.
I'll just kind of position him. Everyone loves Hester Peirce for her positive pro-crypto, pro-markets, pro-individual liberties perspective at the CFTC. And Brian Quintenz is just kind of the equivalent on...
Oh, you mean at the SEC?
Excuse, at the SEC. Brian Quintenz is the equivalent at the CFTC. He's been on Bankless Podcast before. He's been at the Permissionless Conference. He goes to crypto conferences. And so this is basically as an aligned appointee as we could possibly ask for. All right, moving on to airdrops. This is this tweet that I'm showing is kind of just talking about the current airdrop meta. Post airdrop, Pengu down 70%, Anime down 80%, Barrachain down 60% right out of the gate.
You're missing today's big one.
Today's big one. What's today's big one?
Story protocol.
Story. Oh, that happened today?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is it down?
You can pull up the chart. It's IP is the ticker.
All right. It is down 30%. It's down 30%. Now, okay, Tarun, I think you're better at commentating on markets than I am. But when something launches and then in the retroactive airdrop fashion or just an airdrop fashion, and then it goes down within 24 hours, like to me, I'm just like, well, the starting price was arbitrary to begin with. So it's like this fake benchmark that people compare against. Like one person paints a like an X billion dollar valuation on this thing and that sets the chart. But that is not the true price, and the true price is slowly discovered over time. So I've kind of just like considered the first 7 days of trading as not signal and only noise. Check me on that take.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I do think there is an issue, which is kind of true for a lot of infrastructure. So like, here's what I'd say. Like, I think the market had much more patience in 2021, 2022, 2020 for projects that raised privately at high valuations and then took a while to launch and then launched. Mm-hmm. I think meme coins have inevitably lowered the time window that people are willing to wait for valuations to correct, especially when they're like, people are like, hey, there have been fair launches that have done really well since launch, like Hyperliquid, right? Like, I think that's the quintessential example people will give you. And I, you know, as you can see, it's like the only thing that's not really crashing the way everything else is.
Hyperliquid came in at $4 at the start. It went all the way up to $32 and it is holding its price at $25, which is pretty damn solid.
And so I think because of that, the market is like just generally bearish on last private valuations. And so the real question is how long it takes to reset. This sort of reminds me more of like 2018, 2019, where there was a lot of pain before the valuations kind of reset in 2020. Like we might have like a year where, you know, I made this joke to someone the other day, but like there was some point in 2017 where Dentacoin had a higher market cap than like Cosmos, Polkadot, and Tezos, and probably Ethland that became Aave, like at the peak. Like there was just like this like one little window. And I kind of feel like there's going to be the same thing where like the infrastructure projects that people will use will probably just get punished for this year. And then there's going to be something really stupid that, you know, does better than it. But then I think eventually the ones that get used will return to real value. Like, I mean, in Hyperliquid's case, because they created a product that's generating, you know, hundreds of millions in fees annualized right now already, before they launched the token, it was like, it's very hard to undervalue that.
Right.
So I think we're just kind of having this reset. And in the same way, I think the ICO bubble caused infrastructure reset in 2017, 2018, we're kind of having meme coins causing that now. So the value, yeah, I agree. The valuations like were set at some private round, perhaps at a time where the last investor said, oh, if I make the FTV high, then it will, you know, have a successful launch. Because there was an era where like high FTV meant high, you know, your price would actually go up, right? And I think that era is certainly done. But yeah, I do think like, yeah, a lot of the airdrops have been quite brutal. So we'll see.
Mega ETH is doing a, or has done an NFT mint, which is basically a roundabout ICO where you are able to mint an NFT, either like one or two, depending on how many allocations you had. I think maybe the max was per person was able to get was two. And for the 10K NFTs, there's 10,000 supply of these NFTs. These collectively represent a 5% share of the Mega ETH tokens. And with the current price of one ETH per NFT, that makes a valuation of about $560 million for Mega ETH, which I would call pretty fair, at least in comparison to like many of these other like layer ones that are A, getting airdropped, or B, just having private round valuations of, you know, $1 to $3 billion. A Mega ETH valuation for, you know, roughly 5,000 to 10,000 people who get access to this, having a valuation of $560 million, I think is fairly like cheap and low. It's not super cheap, but it's definitely an accessible price. 5,000 NFTs were sold. There will be 5,000 sold in the future because they're going to get distributed to certain teams, and the teams, I think, are going to be able to distribute them. They had Mega ETH had this Echo sale, which just immediately sold out. There's a ton of hype around Mega ETH, simply as I think it's because it's kind of like a logical conclusion design of a layer two. That's kind of like the design pattern that it's fulfilling. The Mega ETH team hand drew the art and then worked with a design studio to generate a 3D model. And let's see if I can find a bunny. Here's one of the bunnies. Here's what it looks like. And then also, if you minted one, there is an LLM behind each one, and you can go talk to your bunny. And the LLM has the Mega ETH white paper as a data source, so you can actually talk to it about the Mega ETH design. Tarun, as it relates to specifically this NFT distribution, call it a future airdrop placeholder, what do you think about this mechanism?
Disclosure, a Mega ETH investor, so I will add that first. But I think they did a very good job not chasing the infrastructure valuations of that era, because like everyone was trying to raise at a big... Because again, there was like this... There was a little era where there were a bunch of tokens that launched. You know, I think like when did Celestia launch? And it was probably like late 2023. When Jito and Celestia launched and like had these crazy, they had high valuations and the tokens did well after that for some number of months. It became this thing where everyone was like, oh, okay, we just need to raise a high valuation that will make our launch more successful. And they very, you know, kind of purposely decided not to do that and instead focused on sort of different distribution mechanisms. So they had kind of been talking about doing something like this for a while. I think the interesting thing about like reading through the Twitter lines was like some people thought it was controversial to do it because they kind of did a kind of hidden ICO or whatever. But honestly,
Was it hidden at all?
I don't understand why people were getting so mad.
I thought wanted the ICOs back.
People just seem so mad on Twitter nowadays. Like they'd rather be mad first. Check if the facts are right later, you know. that's why it's like painful to read Twitter sometimes nowadays.
But I think
it's a good idea. You know, I think like in their case, compared to some of the other recent NFT kind of open launches, I thought that the way they did the art and the 3D model made it very viral, because like a lot of people were sharing them and talking about them, and and I actually think that's an interesting aspect of it, is like you kind of can't just do just an NFT or a meme coin. You really do need to do some kind of like artistic thing that makes it go viral, right? Like and I thought that that was actually like a really good way of, you know, kind of bringing that about. In general,
though,
curious, like
Tarun, here's what my fluffer looks like.
There you go. See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, look at your tweet. That's a great example of the fact that like it's like kind of this like cute thing. It like you can like play around with it. It like it has just enough that's like not just purely like I spent money on this thing waiting for an airdrop, right? Like, which I think that is you got to give them a lot of credit on like spending time on that, because I think There've obviously been a ton of things that are just like, oh, I'm just gonna quickly ICO it, whether it's an Echo or whether an NFT, whatever, and like didn't really put that much thought into the.
It is interesting how like really what this is a placeholder for future tokens. These NFTs are soulbound, so there's no like market for these. They're locked. They're somehow they're going to translate into some share of future Mega ETH tokens. That part is explicit. That's not just like through the lines. That's just explicitly stated. But like it's also just a fun game for people to play and talk about. And like, it doesn't have to do much, but it's animated. Like I can go to the website. It's my little fluffer bunny thing will dance around and I can also talk to it. And it's just enough of an activity to like generate community excitement, even though the art utility of this thing is, you know, barely above zero. It's enough above zero where people are actually like, oh, I'm having fun playing with my Mega ETH NFT. Oh, and then it also represents future tokens too.
Yeah, I think the return to fun is like the thing that I think is clearly missing in a lot of like the current everyone being nihilistic part of the universe. It's like everyone's just kind of like wants to get in the fight first. Mm-hmm. And I think like having things that are fun again will probably hopefully maybe calm people down a bit. Yeah.
They are open. Mega ETH is not the only organization that is doing a future airdrop. C from OpenSea has been explicitly announced by a new Twitter account called OpenSea Foundation. OpenSea Foundation tweeted out, C is coming. The ticker is C. Here are a few things to know. Historical OpenSea usage, not just recent activity, will be an important ingredient. Claim processes will be simple and accessible. U.S. users are welcome. Wow. We are focused on long-term sustainability and supporting a healthy, enduring community. No details on timing yet, but we are learning from the space and getting it right. And then Devin Finzer, the CEO of OpenSea, tweeted out, in addition to this, a lot of changes are happening at OpenSea. We are rolling out OpenSea 2, a brand new OpenSea built from the ground up. NFT handshake emoji tokens, so something about fungible tokens is about going to be relevant here. The C token coming from OpenSea Foundation. We are changing policies that didn't make sense for Web3, re-enabling locked items and delisting connections, collections, and removing unnecessary bans. Basically, trying to be less Web2e, more Web3e. And that's something that he actually just makes explicit about his reflections about the NFT mania. He says, the NFT bull market is behind us. We got too corporate, too Web2, and let fear of risk outweigh building for users. There's a lot more to say in this Devin Finzer tweet, but he finishes up saying, let's fucking go. Tarun, what do you think about the OpenSea pivot or evolution into OpenSea 2 and also them doing a token?
I mean, you know, I don't know what there is to say that hasn't been said. It does feel late, but like, you know, hey, maybe hope springs eternal, and like doing it 4 years later actually has some weird benefit. Like people have some nostalgia. They're like, God, I'm the pumped up fun trenches are just too hard and tyrannical. Like I want to remember the good old days of like buying penguins on OpenSea, you know, like I don't know. I feel like they need to make the nostalgia play, because like to me that I'm not sure it's like net new users are going there. Like something I've said on Chopping Block before, but I think is like kind of true is Solana is really the Gen Z chain. Like I really think like millennial and older is L2s and ETH. But like every kind of young person I know is like, to them, a blockchain is Phantom. It's not like a chain. It's the wallet.
It's not right? Even like, Solana. It's just Phantom.
Yeah, it's just Phantom. Right. And so I just kind of am like, OpenSea kind of already owns the millennial market from 4 years ago. So maybe just like go for the nostalgia.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I think we all just kind of got a little bit of a hint of what I referenced earlier with this. Tarun is actually a cultural connoisseur, which is going to be very important for what we talk about coming up next, because we're going to talk about Vitalik and communism, which is the current thing that's reverberating around crypto Twitter. And we're also going to talk about Jail Stool and Dave Portnoy and that whole meme coin saga. Again, Tarun's favorite subject. So all of that is coming up next. But first, before we get there, a message from Frax, the decentralized central bank on Ethereum, and also their Frax USD stablecoin. It's got some of the best yielding DeFi. It's like if Circle, Athena, and MakerDAO had a baby, and you can go play around with that on the Fraxtal layer 2, which is an OP stack juiced up for super high throughput. Let's go hear from Frax right now. The Arbitrum portal is your one-stop hub to entering the Ethereum ecosystem. With over 800 apps, Arbitrum offers something for everyone. Dive into the epicenter of DeFi, where advanced trading, lending, and staking platforms are redefining how we interact with money. Explore Arbitrum's rapidly growing gaming hub, from immersed role-playing games, fast-paced fantasy MMOs, to casual luck battle mobile games. Move assets effortlessly between chains and access the ecosystem with ease via Arbitrum's expansive network of bridges and on-ramps. Step into Arbitrum's flourishing NFT and creator space, where artists, collectors, and social converge and support your favorite streamers all on-chain. Find new and trending apps and learn how to earn rewards across the Arbitrum ecosystem with limited time campaigns from your favorite projects. Empower your future with Arbitrum. Visit portal.arbitrum.io to find out what's next on your Web3 journey. Thello is transitioning from a mobile-first, EVM-compatible Layer 1 blockchain to a high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built on OP Stack with EigenDA and one-block finality. All happening soon with a hard fork. With over 600 million total transactions, 12 million weekly transactions, and 750,000 daily active users, Thello's meteoric rise would place it among one of the top Layer 2s, built for the real world and optimized for fast, low-cost global payments. As the home of the stablecoins, Thello hosts 13 native stablecoins across 7 different currencies, including native USDT on Opera MiniPay, and with over 4 million users in Africa alone. In November, stablecoin volumes hit $6.8 billion, made for seamless on-chain FX trading. Plus, users can pay gas with ERC-20 tokens like USDT and USDC and send crypto to phone numbers in seconds. But why should you care about Thello's transition to a Layer 2? Layer 2s unify Ethereum. L1s fragment it. By becoming a Layer 2, Thello leads the way for other EVM-compatible Layer 1s to follow. Follow Thello on X and witness the great Thello halvening, where Thello cuts its inflation in half as it enters its Layer 2 era and continuing its environmental leadership. Vitalik Buterin tweeted out, "Make communism great again." Now, granted, this was in a reply to Kevin Iwaki, who tweeted out a screenshot of one of Vitalik's articles, older articles from 2024, coming up on a year old, titled "Degen Communism, the Only Correct Political Ideology." Notably, this article came out on April 1st, so this was very intentional. Vitalik is known to write April Fool's Day articles that toe the line about what you think is reality, whether he's actually making a farcical argument or if he's actually making very good points. So this was on brand for a Vitalik April Fool's joke. But when Vitalik tweeted out, "Make communism great again," everyone has taken him at his word, at face value, thinking that Vitalik is actually a communist, promoting communism, really likes all the whole like central planning thing. And this has kind of reverberated around crypto Twitter. What you are hearing, Bankless Nation, Bankless Listener, is crypto Twitter drama. So if you're not on Twitter, this segment might not be for you, but this is kind of going around in the discussion sphere. And many people, I'm on the camp that this is just very clearly a Vitalik shitpost. This is a Vitalik flavored shitpost. And many other people are like, no, this is real. Even if it is a shitpost, the direction is directionally correct. Tarun, what's your commentary on this?
I agree. Like, I think if you go through, you might find like some messages from Anatoly, from Solana, which are like, yeah, this is a shit post, but probably just hard to parse if you don't already know Vitalik's writings. Mm-hmm. And everyone who's new has probably not seen it. I kind of think the interesting thing is like, this has been more like the splitting of camps in response to this. There's like the Amin, Eva Balin, et cetera, camp. And then there is the Kevin, et cetera, camp. And I think this just more reflects a natural fissure in Ethereum as a community over time that has been growing. Like, there's kind of like the older guard / DeFi and application side of people who feel like people aren't being aggressive enough. And then there's the people who are like hoping that public goods funding alone will like keep Ethereum great forever. And I think like inevitably every society has this type of fissure. Like there's no chain, there will be no blockchain, just like there's no society that does not fissure along this like conservatism versus liberal-ish kind of split. And I feel like that's basically what this is. And Vitalik is, to his credit, a very good emissary of trying to not pick one of the sides, right? Like he believes in credible neutrality. And so I guess like a joke like this is like hard to parse if you, for someone who doesn't have that context, which might be a lot of
crypto Twitter?
I think the interesting thing, other interesting thing is, like, this all stemmed from the EF hiring someone from Gitcoin. Like,
that's
that,
right.
was, like,
yeah, that was, so that was the context that I forgot genesis. To bring up. Is there's this one individual, Devanch. I'm sorry, I've just probably butchered that name. Former Gitcoin and Arbitrum person is now public goods and governance lead at the Ethereum Foundation. Amin Soleimani, who is more of a like hidden in the corners niche character in Ethereum, but if you know, you know, kind of guy.
How he retweeted do you not know this Spank announcement. Chain? I'm just kidding.
The only I am proud to say that the only ICO that I ever invested in personally was the Spank Chain ICO in 2017. I was a one and doner, and that was made by Amin Soleimani. The way I'll characterize Amin is that Ethereum is known to be a land of unicorn and rainbows and like kumbaya vibes, and Amin is the opposite of that. He is hey, Ethereum community, remember to like grow claws and teeth and to use them because there are barbarians at the gate and they will take advantage for you you if you let them. And so he retweets this announcement from this former Gitcoin person going to the Ethereum Foundation saying, please, please, please don't be another Gitcoin commie. And then that spiraled into this tweet thread where we saw make communism great again. And then it, like we've alluded to, this has devolved into many, many different like spurs of conversations out in various different directions. I do think it's funny. Laura Shin put this tweet out, which was the fact that the Ethereum community is talking more about Vitalik's bad joke about communism today rather than about an ETH ETF potentially offering staking yield, or the EF finally deploying capital into DeFi, is a sign of how bad sentiment is in Ethereum right now. And that brings us to the next topic, where the Ethereum Foundation has deployed about 50,000 Ether into Aave, Spark, and Compound to actually use DeFi with some of their Ether treasury, which, like people are saying, is not really as talked about as this whole Vitalik communism joke.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I honestly, my opinion is exactly what Laura said, which is like, the vibes could not be good because there's so much good news that everyone is overlooking. Like, actually, in fact, I started this episode saying there's this positive for ETH, which is the staking ETF. And, you know, like, I feel like everyone's ignoring all the good news because of, like, five words tweeted that were, you know, kind of, okay, you could agree that maybe it was a poor joke. I don't know. But, like, I don't know. That shouldn't be that important. Like, I don't think it, you know, it really shouldn't be the thing driving the discourse. I just think people are mad. And like I said, everyone wants to shoot first, ask questions later. And Twitter used to not be so much, like, obviously all social media has a little bit of that, but I feel like it's like 100x in that direction.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think people want to take the Vitalik communism like take seriously because it's the most entertaining one, for better or for worse. And people are on crypto Twitter to be entertained,
or to earn yaps and for being fake entertaining.
That's exactly what I said. Just kidding. We actually do have to get all riled up for the yaps. Something very real and very fundamental, and something I think everyone should take seriously, is coming out of Arbitrum. So this is from the Arbitrum developers account. After years of research and development, Bold, which is Arbitrum's permissionless fault proofs system, is launching on Arbitrum 1. What this has earned them, and this is a brand new L2 beat page for Arbitrum, and this has earned them the green slice, security slice for fault proof. So now Arbitrum has 4 out of 5 green slices, 1 yellow slice, which is on the exit window, which makes them the most decentralized, the most feature complete in terms of security, layer 2 on Ethereum. Almost a complete set of green slices. And this last one, the exit window, is kind of the most like trivial one. Like, changing the exit window is just a single DAO governance vote away from turning green. And it's not a technical feat. It is just a social political, is it the right time choice? So I will say that this last slice, once that turns green, Arbitrum becomes a fully decentralized stage 2 roll up, which is pretty damn cool. Tarun, what's your take?
I mean, honestly, it's been a long time coming. I feel like they've been the ones pushing the farthest in this direction, you know, at the expense of other things. But like, honestly, it's good to finally see a green pie, especially in a world where like L2 Beat is going to be start filtering L2s based on like how far they are from being stage one or not. I think it's good to have a positive example as opposed to only the like negative examples. Also, the idea that an L2 with that many assets can migrate safely is, you know, I think an accomplishment in and of itself. Nothing more kind of good to say other than like the real question is when does it happen for everyone else?
Yeah, specifically Base. I think all eyes are on Base because Base is not ahead of Arbitrum in TVL, but definitely ahead of Arbitrum, I think, in just like raw number of users and kind of just like focal point and attention. Like Base has kind of been used as the flagship layer two example for Ethereum, and it is still at stage zero. And it's not too far away from stage one, but nonetheless, it is still there. All right, Tarun, are you ready to get into Dave Portnoy, who I'm sure is your favorite character on the face of crypto Twitter right now?
You know, I never considered him part of crypto Twitter, unfortunately.
But he is now.
Now we have to.
He is now. All right, let me run through the history of Dave Portnoy. This actually started maybe Thursday or Friday last week. We didn't include it in the weekly roll-up just because it was too late. Then this saga was ongoing. But Dave Portnoy is now firmly in the trenches. He posted this video of him talking to the camera with a caption, "The world of shitcoins is insane." And he's reacting to his first ever shitcoin trade, where this Montoya Por Favor, which is like, there was this reality TV show with this guy named Montoya who like watched his girlfriend cheat on him. It was trash TV, but whatever. There was a meme coin that he bought, and then he tweeted
that's
out.
That's what that was from?
I'm pretty
okay.
sure, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. No, I didn't even know. I just, thank you for teaching me.
I'm glad I'm giving you the right facts. Dave Portnoy tweeted out, "Uh-oh, Davey learned how to trade shitcoin and is already up a 1 Brazilian percent on my first one. Hashtag Montoya Por Favor." So he tweeted out that he owns this shitcoin. Dave Portnoy has 3.5 million followers. So it is not a trivial thing for Dave Portnoy to be tweeting out a meme coin, especially I'm sure is, you know, only a few million dollars in market cap. Then after he tweeted this out, a few minutes later, he goes, "Holy shit, I have way too much power. I made $25,000 by accident. This is just straight gambling." The tweet that I just tweeted turned it from 2 million to 10 million market cap in a blink. He's also selling that meme coin that he just tweeted out. So that is the first instance of Dave Portnoy learning about meme coins in the pump.fun trenches and then the power that he has when he tweets out these things. He does it again. He tweets out, "I lost $1 million on the Super Bowl. I think I can make $1 million back on Josh Allen MVP coin." Josh Allen is a football player. He says, "Buy at your own risk. I just bought it. I'm going to sell it. Don't buy what you can't lose." A few minutes later, not too much later. So he tweeted that out on 3:15. At 3:24, 9 minutes later, he tweets out, "I'm out. I turned $10,000 into 75 on shitcoins today. It's like playing the Rocket game on DK. I love it." I don't know what that is. So he's just basically tweeting out these shitcoins that he's buying. He does it again. Somebody sent Dave Portnoy's wallet a token called Dave Fartnoy. He goes, "Let's just see how this works. I bought Dave Fartnoy. I got no clue who made it. It was sent to me. I thought it was a cute collectible. I may hold it for a bit. I may sell it at any moment. Buying it is a risk. I'm in this one to make money. I've got no clue who owns it. They could rug you at any moment. No babies. No crying. Don't put in more what you can laugh off losing. No crypto bros crying when the music stops." He once again sells this token very quickly after tweeting about it and is then kind of like shown to be like made up to be this pump and dumper, this celebrity pump and dumper who like thinks he's trading against like a bookie, but rather than he's trading against like actual other degens in the trenches and just dumping on them. As a result of that, of the degens being very offended by Dave Portnoy dumping on them three times in a row, multiple times in a row, somebody makes this meme coin called Jail Stool, as in Stool, Barstool Sports, that's Dave Portnoy's company, Jail Stool. Dave Portnoy, this is the first tweet that he made about this. He goes, "Hey, crypto bros, I think whoever made this coin is funny, and I want to collect it as a memory of you bitches crying like little babies. I might dump it eventually, but I'll let all you righteous losers dump on each other first. So don't put in more than you can lose. These hobby games is a hobby game. Don't cry like a little bitch when you lose. Bye, Felicia." This causes the Jail Stool token to absolutely pump. He says he accidentally sells it, but then he buys back double. He just sells something and he buys back twice what he sold, and then he says that he's just not going to sell until it hits $1 billion. So he starts to seriously pump the hell out of this meme coin that he both bought and was sent to him, and then it rockets up to like almost $300 million market cap. He has he tweets out a screenshot of a $4 million Phantom wallet, and he still hasn't sold to his day. This token, Jail Stool, so was listed by Kraken, listed by a few centralized exchanges. It almost hit $300 million, like I said. It is now down to $70 million, but I think it has really kind of like allowed the meme coin trenches to jump the shark. I think a lot of people are just fed up with meme coins as a category as a result of this shenanigans by Dave Portnoy. He's still doing it. He's still in the trenches. He's still like playing little games. But I think there's been some mixed reactions about like whether or not this is even good for crypto. Tarun, that was a huge monologue. What's your take?
Probably not great for crypto from a PR standpoint. Let's start with that. But the second thing that is worth saying is I feel like this is like financial performance art of like FinDom or like BDSM. Like the people who are watching, who are like his fans, who are listening to him say, "I am going to dump on you, disclosure, but do whatever you want, buy my token if you want," and then he does dump on them, you know, it's like they did, if they had some like personal responsibility, it was their fault. They could have read the fucking tweet, right? Like, and so I feel like this is like a financial nihilism is now into like financial domination. And this feels a little bit like that's like,
please dump on me, daddy.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. That's like the vibe, which is just very weird. I don't know. I mean, I guess people who are spending like money on, you know, AI girlfriends, this is like maybe a equivalent kind of way of losing money, but like the whole thing is very weird to me. I find this idea that like, see, the other celebrity coins don't disclaim anything, right? You like look at Scottie Pippen's Twitter and you're like, okay, well, this guy's not trying to tell his fans he's gonna dump on them, but Portnoy is telling you and like almost disgustingly telling you that he's going to lose you money. Like it's even weirder. Like that's what I mean. There's like the celebrity coins where they like pretend that it's a real thing, and then there's the Portnoy thing where he's like telling you he's going to dump on you.
Is this a better meta or a worse meta than celebrities who are faking promotion of their coin?
Everything is bad. Some are worse. Okay. I don't know which one is the worst, though.
Do you think meme coins are as a category bad? Or is it just like a fruitless argument?
I kind of think like everything, there's always like for everything, there's always some good in it. Like, you know, if you think about the ICO boom, like, yeah, sure, 90% were dog shit and didn't work, but the ones that did survived and created new stuff, mm-hmm. right? I'm sort of the mindset that there will be something interesting that comes out of meme coins. If only that it's the infrastructure, it's the UX, it's getting people used to them, whatever. Mm-hmm. The celebrity coin thing, though, feels like cash grab, not like...
Yeah, I think it's really hard for a celebrity coin to be redeemable in any particular way.
Yeah, the celebrity coin ones are... But then the celebrity coins that tell you they are going to rug you are even weirder, right? It's like that's what I'm saying. It's like some type, it feels like it's like FinDom. It's like FinDom for Gen Z. You know, there was FinDom for millennials. Now there's FinDom.
Is this the beginning and the end of FinDom? Or do you think that this is actually the foot in the door for future FinDom activities on chain?
I think like in the past, people's FinDom predilections were private. Now they're very public. That's the... You know, it's like I can see your entire on-chain history of getting domed by Portnoy.
Oh my god. Okay, Tarun, this is an hour and I don't know if I want to talk about Dave Portnoy anymore.
So we're gonna I agree and wrap this
fine,
moving
up.
On.
Tarun, thank you so much for helping me walk through the news today. If people appreciated your takes or just like the sound of your voice, they can follow you on Twitter, but they can also listen to you on The Chopping Block. Tell them a little bit more just about you, who you are, and what they can hear from you by following you on Twitter and other takes that you give out. You write very intellectual papers, which is maybe not what people expect after this episode. Tell us just a little bit more about where they can find you.
Yeah, Twitter, it's just my name, Tarun, C-H-I-T-R-A. And I think a lot of what I write on is, you know, DeFi, investing, and risk stuff within DeFi. I think the one thing I will say is being an investor in the space for a while has made me have to always question what I've believed over time, which is why, even though David likes saying it's because I know something about culture, it's more that I just try to follow what people are doing online, and I've just gotten kind of this I've been trying to understand like why people want to trade meme coins, and I still don't have a good answer. But if I do, I'll make a 10-part podcast series for you.
if anyone can figure that out, I would appreciate that. Tarun, thank you so much for joining me this week on the Weekly Rollup.
Thanks.
Bankless Nation, you guys know the deal. Crypto is risky. Dave Portnoy could dump on you. You could lose what you put in. But nonetheless, we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone. But we are glad you are with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.